So we're going to have our model stated tonight. We're not yet starting. We're still making preparations. So this stage of the game is the 14th. We're still playing it like we're the day before the Seder, when we have to make all the preparations. So what goes into the preparations? Well, we have to know the volumes of what we're going to be eating. So those of you, does everyone have a little pamphlet? They can be found online on torahforme.org and holidays section under Passover. So on the holidays section, we put these pamphlets. We made copies for you guys. Keep them. Why am I giving out so many pamphlets? That should be all. Maybe I can't see from here what that is.
What do you do? It's the same thing. It's missing some...
What do you mean? How's it missing? They had a very organized person organizing it.
It was organized before the
statement. If yours is missing something, so take a different one.
How many pages is it supposed to be?
It's supposed to be 14 pages. Okay, so let's begin. You have this pamphlet. And this year, Pesach falls out which day of the week?
Monday
night, right? The night between Monday and Tuesday. So what do we have to do in preparation for Pesach? We have to clean our houses, right? That we know. And you guys should go to Rabbi and sell your chametz. First of all, you got to clean. Get rid of whatever chametz you had. It's good to make a list of what needs to be cleaned. For example, I forgot that I had a closet here in Mahon Meir, aside from in Rav Listman's office. So Yehuda did me the favor of reminding me. And when I remembered this week, I took out all the chametz before I forget again that I actually have that closet. That's why you guys got cereal Sunday night, because I wanted to get rid of everything in the closet. So, the vacuum cleaner bag, that's something. You could find good lists online in Chabad. Just do a search, chametz list, and you'll find. You got to clean the pockets of your clothing, because every so often you do put food in your pockets. And anywhere you might find sizable chametz, sell your chametz. You could sell with Chabad online, by the phone. You could go to a rabbi, do it traditionally. But you don't have to. If you're stuck in the Midwest or something, you could fill out the form with Chabad online, or you could sell by phone to a rabbi that knows how to do it. But sell your chametz. And what that does is that the rabbi's going to be your messenger to sell it to a non-Jew. And then you lock up that chametz. You leave it non-accessible. If you are going to be in a different time zone over Pesach, if you're going to be in Chutz Lartz over Pesach, so then you run into the problem that right after Pesach, the rabbi offers the non-Jew to sell back the chametz. And that's how we get it back. If you're in the United States, you have another day of Pesach, and your chametz is being bought back into your possession on Pesach, you've got a problem if you're in a different time zone. So you have to find a rabbi, either in the United States, that will sell the chametz earlier than Pesach begins in Israel, right? If you're in the United States and the rabbi sells the chametz in the morning before Pesach, here in Israel it's already Pesach. If you have chametz in this time zone, you've got a problem. So being that you guys have things here in this time zone, and you have things in your parents' time zone, So you have to sell your chametz, go to the stringency on both sides. Have it sold before Pesach starts here and have it bought back after Pesach ends there, if you're going to be there for Pesach or if you own chametz there, right? If you're flying back and forth or whatever, it goes by where you just have to take that into account. Okay. We have a mitzvah, bedikas chametz. You have a question?
What happens if you, when you leave your parents' home, you have the intention that everything you possessed there before is not yours anymore?
Okay. Do you know of any chametz that you have there?
An oven.
An oven isn't chametz.
Okay, but there is crumbs there.
The crumbs we're not worried about. Who cares about the crumbs?
So, bottle of scotch.
Bottle of scotch? So tell your father he could drink it. Give it to someone. Tell him it's all theirs. Or sell it. Sell it with your chametz. You know, I have a relative who visits us every so often, and they're very finicky about their scotch. So they brought their scotch once to my house, and they said, when I visit, I want you to take out this bottle. So, okay. for accommodating hosts. I have a box of scotch, this guy's scotch. Every time he comes, he brings another scotch. And he says, next time I want to drink both of these. Okay, fine. You guys don't do this. I don't have room for too many more scotch bottles. But I called them up there, Pesach, a few years ago, and I said, you know, I have your scotch bottles here. When you sell your chametz, take into account, it's your bottles. Those ain't my bottles. He said, you could have them. I said, okay, what am I going to do? If you're giving them to me, I'm giving them to someone else. I got nothing to do with your scotch. So he said, okay, I'm not giving them to you. Give them back. So he sells his scotch in my house. You guys, if you have scotch in your parents' house or whatever it is, figure out what to do with it. But you got to take that into account. You have mitzvah bedikas chametz. You have to check for the chametz. Aside from the actual getting rid of the chametz, we check for the chametz. And if you guys are going to leave here, you have to do a bedika the evening before you leave. We check with the flashlight. We turn on all the lights. And then we check the flashlight. Make a blessing before the search. When we're going to search on the correct night, on the night of the 14th. And then afterwards, we say that any chametz that might remain in our possession is null and void. We want to have nothing to do with it. Whoever wants it could have it. It's from our perspective, it's not important. And that you could look in the Agado. You have to understand what you're saying. It's not a bunch of VGVG. You got to understand that you're saying something legal. Yes, sir.
When you declare that you want to sell your chametz to someone else, does it have to be in writing or can it be verbal?
If you're selling it, so usually we fill out a written contract. We do. And the way we do it is technically we give over a little bit of land, and together with the land, we give over the chametz. Mm-hmm. It's called a kinyan agav. We also give over the keys sometimes. We make a real contract. Now, the rabbi here and all, Yitzhak will do it for you. Many rabbis will do it for you. But don't wait till the last minute. Yes?
And the land?
Any land that you're renting is also good. Ask Rav Bigun if you could give him the land here in the Machon. Ask him. Ask Rav Bigun.
You don't own anything.
Right. It's a good question. We still say that.
You're talking about today? So I got lost about land one.
Usually when we give over the chametz, the rabbi will give you a handkerchief. And he'll say, okay, when I give you this handkerchief, your chametz becomes mine. That's one of the ways he might give you a key, he might give you a pen. He's giving you something and that becomes his. And sometimes what we also do is we say, you're going to give over a little bit of land. You can give over a tile under the fridge, which you're renting. Meaning technically, let's say you're renting from the yeshiva, you're a space in the room. So you give over a tile of space under your bed. And you say, together with that tile of space that I'm giving over to you, I'm also giving all the chametz that I own. That's one of the ways in which we do the kinyan, we do the sale. Now, the morning before Pesach, we burn the chametz. If you're here in Israel, you'll see many street corners have done. They make their pile and they burn it. Get there early enough. Look at the calendar. See what time you have to be done with your chametz. Bring it. And after you burn it, you say, anything that's in my possession, any chametz or leaven, yeast, whether I know about it or don't know about it, I want to have nothing to do with it. It's hefker. Whoever wants could have it. From my perspective, it's worthless. And then thank your wives. If you don't have wives, so get one. Well, not yet. That's the right time. But remember that, you know, the wives work very hard preparing for Pesach. If you could give your wife a nap that day, that's amazing. Now, so this is the technical preparations beforehand. You guys got to take a haircut, take a shave, take a shower, go to mikvah, prepare for Yom Tov. Shave and a shower are rabbinic. The rabbis made an institution that were prohibited from shaving and taking a haircut on Chol HaMoed in order to encourage us to prepare for the Yom Tov and shave and take a haircut before the Yom Tov. So that's the reason we're prohibited to do it on Chol HaMoed, so that we will honor the holiday and do it beforehand. You are also prohibited from doing laundry on Chol HaMoed because the rabbis want us to have all our laundry ready before Yom Tov. If your suit needs to get clean, bring it to the cleaners. You're supposed to have extra nice clothing for Yom Tov, even better than your Shabbos clothing. There's Yom Tov, Shabbos, Chol HaMoed, weekday. Chol HaMoed is less than Shabbos. Okay, if you're married and you're Ashkenazi, you should have a kittel. A kittel is a white garment that's made of the cheapest material. And the idea of a kittel is twofold. Either that we have a simple white garment, and this is what a person gets buried in. In the days of Chazal, the cheapest material was linen. It has no pockets. It's just a solid, white, simple, long robe. And this is what a person gets buried in. The ones they bury us in are without buttons. They're like an overall, like, you know, one long nightgown. Sfaradim don't do this, to the best of my knowledge. Sfaradim don't wear a kittel. The other idea is that we're like angels. So if you have a kittel, launder it and iron it before Yom Tov. Have your shirts nice and ironed. Get ready for Yom Tov. And all of this should be done beforehand. The laundry, the shave, the haircut could be done the morning of, but you're going to have a lot to do the morning before Pesach, so you might want to do it the day earlier or 2 days earlier. Many people have the custom, we'll get to you in 1 second, of taking on the customs of mourning for the first 33 days of Sfir Sa'omer, which means you won't get a haircut or a shave till Lag Ba'omer. Some people only start on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, so then you'll be able to take a haircut and a shave again after Yom Tov. Yes, sir.
Getting a haircut before going into exile again is good enough, regardless of when we go to Chutz Laretz.
When are you going to Chutz Laretz?
I think 6 days before.
Yeah, Chutz. That's fine. The idea is to look nice for the Yom Tov. Sometimes people look better a week after their haircut, not the day after.
Right. So to me, it doesn't really matter. But, it's just the back of my neck, really. That's the only problem.
Yeah. So if we're talking about haircuts, let's review the laws of getting haircuts. We have a biblical mitzvah. I'll get to you in 1 second. We have a biblical mitzvah of not cutting the corners of our hair. What are the corners of our hair? People who have hair have a hairline up here. You guys can see there where it used to be, right? So the hairline goes still here, and then we have a hairline behind our ear. The Torah says, do not equate the hairline here with the hairline behind the ear. Don't cut straight down. Don't make it one long hairline. Meaning, from this point, going like a square down, this part of the head, this part of the hair, should not be cut shorter than about 3 millimeters. The hair has to be long enough that you could fold it over on itself. That's this part of the hair. So it has nothing to do with the razor blade. Meaning, even if you're going to use a hair cutting machine, and you're going to cut the corners of your hair up here, shorter than a hair that could be folded on itself, you have a problem. So that's the corners of the head. The beard, Torah says, do not destroy the corners of your beard. We don't know exactly where that is. Is that here? Is that here? The corners of different bones in the cheek. We're not sure. We know there are 5 corners on the cheek. We don't know where they are. And the Torah says we're not allowed to cut them with a knife. So that's why we're not allowed to put a razor to our face, anywhere on our face, because we don't know exactly where that is. You want to have a haircut on the back of your head with a knife? Well, the back of your head is not your face. That's okay. I mean, make sure you trust the barber. That's okay. Over here, you can't cut short the rest of it. You could have a balding. Tosa says it's not very nice. It's not a way of honoring Yom Tov. But that's, al tam ma'areach. Whatever you like is up to you. Okay, you had another question. Yes, sir.
Chabad doesn't let me into the town mikvah, can I go in a river tributary?
River what?
Tributary, like the small piece of a river that goes into the big part of the river.
So technically, some rivers are kosher mikvahs, some are not, being that a river is moving water, so a river would have to be primarily from underground streams and not from rainwater. That is very difficult to calculate, especially at the end of the winter. But being that you're going right, so melted snow technically is a disqualified mikvah once it's moving. Meaning rainwater must be standing. Underground water could be moving. A mikveh by definition means standing water. Water that's moving, in order for it to be a qualified mikveh, must be from underground streams and not from rainwater like melted snow. So that's why if your wife is going to want to use such a mikveh, your wife needs a biblical mikveh to purify herself, you can't do that without verifying with a local Orthodox rabbi that's a kosher mikveh, a rabbi that's really looked into. Now, if it's a rabbi that just got a smicha, and really, there are some people who just, the town needs someone to appoint as a rabbi, so they say, you be the rabbi. There are many towns like that. They say, you learned a little more than I did. And then that guy might give you an answer that's not qualified. But if it's a bona fide rabbi who's really looked into it and he's familiar with this, so then, I feel bad saying this, but we all know, you guys sometimes are in out-of-town locations where you just appoint the rabbi, the guy who happened to be in Machon Meir for 2 years. And I respect the guys who are in Machon Meir for 2 years, but that doesn't mean that they're going to know all the answers. So assuming he's a bona fide rabbi, so then he might be able to find out for you. It's not easy to calculate and find out whether the river is primarily rainwater or primarily underground streams. But you don't really need a mikvah. It's a good custom to go to mikvah before Yom Tov. So you could rely that it's a good mikvah. But so, make sure they don't take you to court. I don't know if you're allowed to go.
Yeah,
skinny dipping.
I know. This is one of the worries. How long before Pesach can I get a haircut?
Whenever you'll still be looking good on throughout Pesach. It's a way of honoring Yom Tov. Okay. Now, the eve of Pesach. So, we know that's the day when the firstborn were killed. So the custom is that the firstborn fast. And when you'll have children who are minors, being that minors also were killed in Egypt, right? And the plague of the firstborn, the minors also died. So we fast in their stead until they become bar mitzvah. The parent has to fast instead of them. Do girls have to fast? Usually the custom is that they don't. Some say they should. It's unclear whether girls died in the plague of the firstborn. It seems they did. But it's not clear whether they ever had the custom to fast or not. It's quoted in Halacha that if you partake of a seudas mitzvah, a meal that revolves around the mitzvah, then you don't have to fast. That overrides this custom of fasting on the eve of Pesach. So, if you're invited to bris, okay, it's going to be tough. You know, it's tough timing, but no one asks us when a baby is going to be born and when there's going to be a bris. That's a seudas mitzvah, good for you. What most people do is they try to attend the minyan where someone will be making a siyum. And many minyanim have a siyum. And then that guy, he's celebrating, he just finished a tractate. If we stick to our Megillah learning, we could make a siyum on Megillah. I don't know. That depends on you guys. A real bona fide siyum is a sudas mitzvah, and you could partake of that. And once you broke the fast, because you're part of a sudas mitzvah, so then you can continue eating the rest of the day. So you should check. Not every minyan has a seal. Like if a shul has 5 minyanim, could be the first minyan will have a seal, the third minyan will have a seal, but the 9:15 minyan you're going to roll into might not have a seal. So you got to check. That's the way we get around this. So find a seal. Yes, sir.
We have an older brother who won't fast. Can we fast for him?
I wouldn't worry about it. His parent is it's his responsibility. Yeah. Okay. Now we try to finish everything, all work by noon, because from noon till the evening was the holiday of Pesach, meaning it's a misnomer what we call Passover Pesach. Really, Pesach is the holiday before the holiday, the afternoon before that night of what we call Passover of Chag HaMatzos, when we'd bring the Paschal offering. What would be this year? I think. Monday afternoon, right? This year Pesach falls out the night between Monday and Tuesday, I think. So Monday afternoon, that's when they'd bring the Pesach offering, and it was a miniature holiday. They'd sacrifice it that afternoon and eat it that night. So at that time, we stop doing work. You go to Mincha, you rest, and you set up the Seder. We stop doing Melacha noontime on the eve of Pesach. It becomes like Chol HaMoed. So you got to get everything done beforehand. Want to get your stuff from the cleaners? Get it beforehand. Whatever you need to get done, you should have done by noon. Whatever work that you wouldn't do on Chol HaMoed, you're not supposed to be working. If you have a cleaning job, get all your cleaning done beforehand. Burning chametz has to be done long beforehand. Check the calendars. Okay, so now, and this is where we're up to in our model Seder, Monday afternoon, the preparations for the Seder. Those of you who will be attending my Seder, be in touch. We'd like to see you to help with these preparations. And before we begin, I want to share with you two types of houses. You know, there are houses where everyone has a maid. She's called the mother. Yeah. Just familiar with that? She cleans the toilets. She does the laundry. She prepares the food. She cleans up after everyone. She washes the dishes. And, you know, to each his own. I'm not going to get involved with how you run your houses, what your wives do and what your kids help and what you help. That's your business. I think a person who behaves properly is going to help. If you guys are going to be home for Shabbos or for Yom Tov, I think it's right to help. But that's already, I'm not getting involved. But you should know that one of the great experiences that you and your children could have when it comes to Pesach is the fun of preparing the things for Pesach. And we're going to see right now that it really is a lot of fun to prepare. And it's a totally different world walking into the Seder and having the charoses sitting there that your mother prepared, and walking into the Seder and you'll see the charoses that you prepared with your own two hands. Walking into the Seder and seeing the maror that your mother prepared, or walking into the Seder and there's the maror that you went out and bought, you cleaned, you measured, you have it ready. It adds to the festive atmosphere when everyone helps and everyone is part of the preparation. I've seen homes where the mother even prepares the pillows for the kids. I don't think that's right. Let the kids participate. We find when... let's go back to the beginning of the story. A person once said to Rabbi Feinstein, to Rabbi Reuven Feinstein, he said, you know, we should learn from the Arabs. The Arabs, they're very hospitable. You come to their house, they'll put out a great table and coffee, and they're very hospitable. And the Sfaradim who live among the Arabs, you see, they got from the Arabs. You come to a Shachris and a Sfaradi shul, when they have a yard site, they take out good food. Not like the Ashkenazim that bring a little bit of cake and schnapps. No, the Sfaradim, they know how to be hospitable. So Rabbi Feinstein didn't like that too much, but he said that the hospitality of the Arabs really goes back to what we find in Parshas Vayera. In Parshas Vayera, you find Avram is 3 days after his circumcision. He's in pain. And he sees three Arabs, they're three angels, and he runs to greet them and invites them into his house. Now he needs to prepare some meat for them. He has a lot of servants he could ask to help. And he has a son who's lying in bed, 13-year-old Yishmael, who is also suffering. He's also had a circumcision 3 days ago. And instead of asking one of the servants, Avram tells Yishmael, son, go fetch the calves. Go get the animals. And we see here an important lesson in Chinuch. Avram doesn't let his son just lie in bed, and Avram does the work or the servants do the work. Because this was part of the lifestyle of Avram Avinu, and this was truly an integral part of Avram's home, Avram knew that to Yishmael it was a given that if a guest comes, you get up and you go and you get the calves. And Avram instilled that in Yishmael to the point that till today the Arabs are known for their hospitality. They didn't take anything else from Avram Avinu, but the hospitality they got. No, think about it. We sometimes want to make our children's lives easy. And we're making a mistake sometimes, because sometimes they have to see, I'm putting my efforts into doing this, and you're going to put your efforts into doing this, because this is important. So when it comes to the Seder, if the Seder only begins at night, and the kid wasn't involved in the preparations, you're taking away something from him. It's to his benefit to be involved in the preparations. Believe me, I could have taken 25 minutes and prepared everything we're going to prepare now. But I want you to prepare. I want you to know how to do it. You'll do it in your own homes. So I went to the shuk, and I got the cinnamon sticks, even though I should have maybe sent one of you guys to go get them. And I went to the shuk, and I got the horseradish, which is not easy to get. I saved you guys that. And Yehuda schlepped around in the hot sun today and got us the date spread and the apples and the grape juice and the wine and the matzah. And yishar koach to Yehuda. Thank you very much. Really couldn't have done it without him. But we will make the things together. So the first step, we have to think, what do we need? So we need maror, right? The Torah says you eat the paschal offering together with maror. So we don't have a paschal offering, but the rabbis instituted we should eat maror. Maror is a species. There are five different types of plants included in that species. One is the lettuce. Now lettuce, classically, has a lot of little green bugs that you can't see. And if you buy one of these companies that say Yerakot Nikim Echarakim Umitola'im, vegetables clean of bugs and worms, and Truma Maisu is taken off, and then they tell you Yesh Lishtof Lifnei Achila, but you got to wash it before you eat it. So some people think I bought this, it's okay. And if you look closely, you'll see a little bugs on here, because they ensure that the little green bugs that you can't see and you can't take off easily, they're not here. But they don't ensure that there aren't any little flies in here. If you wash it off, then it's clean. If you buy lettuce from the shuk, regular lettuce, washing it off isn't enough. You can wash it 15 times and then look, and you'll see little green bugs. But if you buy this type, they're ensuring that it doesn't have the little green bugs, but it might have other bugs that come off with the wash. So you do have to wash it. So we have this type of maror. Now this ain't too bitter. So there's another type of maror called horseradish soup. And that's my customers to eat this type of maror, horseradish root. And this is very sharp. Now, gold horseradish, to the best of my knowledge, is mixed with vinegar. And that disqualifies it from being kosher for maror. So, if your mother wants to buy the horseradish, the ground horseradish in the store, make sure the horseradish isn't sitting in vinegar or in any other thing. It's got to be pure horseradish. So here we have some beautiful pure horseradish straight out of the ground. You wash it, which you guys will do, Bezrat Hashem, and then you peel it, and then you grate it. And you're going to do all of the above. We'll get there. Now, one of the things I like doing, on the eve of Pesach, the guys come to my house, and then we grate this horseradish. Now, these are expensive. They go 40, 50 shekel a kilo, horseradish. Not so cheap. And the room smells so sharp that everyone starts crying. So every year we have pictures of the guys standing there laughing and crying, grating the horseradish. We'll get to that. So we need maror. Rabbinically, we eat maror. We commemorate the maror that was eaten together with the Paschal offering. So we're going to have to prepare the maror. What else do we eat on Pesach? We eat matzah. So you got to get matzah. And Yehuda, do we have matzah?
Yes.
Okay, so we have matzah. What else do we need? Let's. What? Well, there are people who do. They do. They buy an oven that's special for baking matzah, and you could use a regular toaster oven. I have a friend who does it. My experience is that a person who's not professional at it is more likely to mess up. It's not so easy to knead the dough. You have to get flour that's kosher for matzah baking. You have to have water that's good, clean water. Then you have to knead it, roll it, make holes in it, and bake it in under 18 minutes. Not so easy. You know, I know people who do it, and they spend all afternoon before Pesach trying to make matzahs, and they walk away with a few matzahs, and they're good at it. They've been doing it for a few years. Not so easy. You also need the tools to make the holes. The professionals do it better. There is an opinion that says that the matzah that's eaten on the night of Pesach should be matzah that was made on the afternoon of Pesach. Rashi held that way. Many commentaries held that way. That's why the Hasidish Rebbes, they're all very careful about this. If you want to get a matzah like that, one matzah could cost you 150, 200 shekel. One matzah. Because the bakeries know that everyone's vying for a slot to get a matzah like that. So those are very expensive. But if you want to make it at home, that's what friends of mine do. They make it at home. You could technically try and do it, but I would try beforehand. I wouldn't count on those matzahs first. Do a practice run. Make sure you can really do it. Okay, so we got to prepare pillows. You guys have pillows? Because when you lean, ideally you should be leaning on a pillow. Oh, worst comes to worst, you lean on a chair, it's okay. But lechatchila, you should be leaning on a pillow. And we need cups for our wine. We're going to drink 4 cups. So we need wine, and we need cups. You guys want to get cups? You guys are going to drink, no? So in a minute, we'll pause and you'll all get cups. And what else are we going to have on the Seder plate? So we need salt water. We're going to dip our karpas in salt water. So who's going to volunteer to make salt water? Not everyone at once now. Here, we got a... You can wash this out. I'm putting water. I got to ask Yehuda. I forgot to ask him for salt.
I have salt.
You have salt? Okay, great. So you'll be in charge of making the salt water. We're trying to make it pretty salty. Salt water should be prepared before Yom Tov Lechatchila. And we need a shank bone, which commemorates the Paschal offering. So we roast the shank bone. So when you roast the shank bone, people sometimes put it directly on the grate. The problem with that is that the grate that you put your pots on, you put fleshik pots and milchik pots, and sometimes these spill over and sometimes those spill over. So the grate can have a little bit of milchik oil mixed with a little bit of fleshik oil, and that disqualifies the shank bone. You can't eat it. It's not kosher. Anything that's on the grate, we assume, is probably not kosher. So if you're going to roast it directly on the grate, you can't eat it. So this shank bone was roasted directly on the grate. You can't eat it. Some people have the custom that they cheat. They take a neck of a chicken and they roast it and they say, this is our shank bone. And no one knows the difference, right? I told you it's a shank bone, you didn't know. So, okay, whatever, you have something roasted in memory of the Korban Pesach. Lechatchila, we take a shank bone, but you don't have a shank bone, so you use this. Okay, so this is going to go on our Seder plate in memory of the Paschal offering that was roasted. And we take an egg, which we also roast or cook. and that's in memory of the Korban Chagiga. The truth is, any baked thing will do, but the custom is to take an egg. Well, maybe we'll get to discuss why, or you'll learn it in the note. So these go out here. The shank bone, the egg. We always give more importance to the one on the right. And, well, the Paschal offering is the main thing tonight, so that's going to go on the right. Okay, so what else do we need? We said maror, we need charoses. So we will make the charoses shortly. We'll discuss how we make the charoses. What is the charoses? So technically, the charoses is some kind of dip that would make the maror less bitter. The Talmud says the maror had some type of worm in it, something in it that could really harm a person. And if you dip it in the charoses, that balances it out. Then you won't be harmed by eating the maror. So what do people sometimes do? They take their maror, they put a swab of charoses all over it, and then you can't taste the maror, and then they have a delicious sandwich. That's good for the meal. It's not good for the maror. The maror has to be tasted. You dip it and you wipe off the charoses and you eat the maror. If you have a hard time eating the horseradish, eat lettuce. That's fine. Clean off the lettuce and eat the lettuce. According to some opinions, that's the ideal form of maror. There are five species mentioned in the Mishnah, and according to some opinions, this is the best species, the lettuce. So you can do that. Those of you who are coming to our Seder, we have lettuce ready for you. I eat this because that's what my grandfather ate. I eat the horseradish. But you don't have to do that. You're going to see me changing colors at the Seder. It's really tough.
This much.
So we discussed that last class. How much is a kazayas? Maybe we'll get back to discuss how much is a kazayas. The volume of an olive. We'll get back to that, I hope.
An olive.
A kazayas. Now, if you can, take a nap the afternoon before Pesach. You'll believe me. Every year I offer the guys, let's keep learning. And every year, 85 to 95 to 100% of the guys say, I'm out. I end up staying. Last year we actually had a nice showing. Two guys, I think, stayed till the morning hours we were learning. Till about 3, 4 in the morning. The wine is hard. You're not eating all afternoon. And that's why my recommendation is take a little drop of wine and mix it with grape juice. So long as it's a little bit alcoholic, that's enough. You can even take only grape juice. Here in Israel, most people drink only grape juice. Rabbi Feinstein is of the opinion that ideally you should have something that could potentially intoxicate if you drink enough bottles of it. So if it has a little bit of wine, that's enough. Guys always tell me I can handle my wine, and they forget that they haven't been eating all day, and they haven't been eating normally all week, at least, and their stomachs are pretty empty. And to drink wine on an empty stomach, shoots up to the head. And every year I have guys who conk out in the middle of the Seder, and guys who go drunk in the middle of the Seder, and I'm telling you, most guys don't stay awake. Now that's not the mitzvah. So I say, if you're so confident you can handle the wine, leave it for the third and fourth cup, after the meal. Make sure you've lasted that long. Prove it to me then. Prove it to yourselves then. The first two cups, take 90% grape juice, 10% wine if you want to mix. Or go like Israelis do and take only grape juice. And the wine, there's still time to drink. Yavol Pesach.
50% wine for all four
times. That's my recommendation. Telling you, guys don't listen to me. Every year. I said 10-15% of the cup. If you mix wine and grape juice, 90% of the cup is grape juice, 10% is wine. It has it has a little bit of alcohol in it. It won't knock you out. If you drink enough of that, if you drink five bottles of that, you could go drunk. It could intoxicate, so that's enough. You don't need it to be stronger than that.
You could be urinating enough to...
It's not enough, I'm telling you.
No, but if you dilute it so much, you're never going to be able to drink enough quick enough to get drunk.
I don't think so. So anyway, sir, go like the Israelis, drink only grape juice. I recommend you call your parents and wish them a happy Yom Tov. I think that's part of their heritage, make your parents happy. And you guys, before Yom Tov, you're supposed to partake, give a little bit of tzedakah for the poor to buy their matzah. It's called Mos Chitim or Kimcha Defisva, so that's something you could already do now. We light candles in honor of Yom Tov. If you're going to be a guest, so you should partake of those candles. You could give the host a half a shekel, 20 agurot to partake of the candles, or most hosts will forego the 20 shekel and they'll tell you, here, take a candle and lift part, and you'll acquire part of the candle.
Yeah. If you just bring something like a bottle of wine, if you bring
has nothing
gifts
to do with it.
Okay.
Bottle of wine is a bottle of wine. The candles, you have to own part of the candle. They have to be lighting on your behalf as well.
Okay.
Okay, so now we're up to the mitzvahs of the night, but we're not yet up to that. We have to prepare. So we're still holding the eve of Pesach, before Pesach. We did our bdikas chametz. We got rid of all the chametz. And now we went and burnt all our leftover chametz. We said any chametz that's in our possession should be null and void. And what we're up to now are the real down-to-earth preparations so that we will have a seder. So pillows, I hope you guys have. Now we have to start preparing the food. And we have to realize the volumes. So you guys have to go and get cups, so you'll be able to drink your four cups. Reuven, you'll wash that out, rinse it out clean, please, and fill it with water and salt. And
how much water?
How much water? You can fill it up halfway, just so guys could dip their vegetable inside. And I forgot to bring a vegetable to dip in the salt water. I forgot. See? I didn't look over the list. What? So ideally you don't use the same vegetable you would use for marrow. If you have no choice like us tonight, so you could do it. But lechatila, I should have brought peppers for us to dip in there, a green vegetable. So I messed up on that one. I forgot. Okay.
There is a little melafafon, I think. You can check if they have.
So see, if they have a melafafon, a cucumber is also good. Any vegetable that you could dip in the salt water. That's better than using the chasa. Okay, so we have to... Okay, so we have our matzahs, we have our madrich, and everything's okay. And
I have a question. Let's say you live in the dorms, and you ate all your chametz before Pesach, and you don't have any food in the room. So what's is there still? I mean, like, would you go through the process of selling?
Yes, I'll tell you why. Because sometimes we miss things. Take that closet I forgot I had here in the Mahon. I one year I was all alone in a dorm and I said, I have no chametz and I have nothing to sell and I didn't go and sell my chametz. Okay. I do a check. I check my stuff the night before Pesach. Pesach comes. Pesach goes. We're holding 2 months after Pesach. And one day I tell my roommate, you know, your bag is sitting up there in the closet already for months. Do you mind if I move it just so I could fit more things in that closet? He tells me, my bag? It's not my bag. I said, it's not my bag. So we look around. Everyone says it's not their bag. So I said, okay, let's see what's inside. We take down the bag. We look. There's a bag of pretzels. There's a bag of I don't remember what else. And they were all mine. And I'd forgotten. I bought it one Friday. I was in a rush. I put it up there. And I forgot it existed. And then I to the point where when I was checking for comments, I didn't look in the bag because I knew that wasn't my bag. You know, I was sure it's his bag. 2 months after Pesach, I suddenly discovered that all Pesach long, I had a bag of pretzels sitting up there. So, you know, you could be very confident you don't have chametz, and you could do everything that you could, you know, physically do, and still discover 2 months later that you missed something. So we say, okay, I said all my chametz is hefker, I said all my chametz is null and void, I said I want to have no chametz in my possession, fine. I did all that, I didn't transgress biblically. But at the end of the day, if you could ensure it in one more way by selling any chametz you might have, so it is a good backup. It's a good idea. Yeah.
Since we all live amongst others, we're only really responsible for like our bed and our closet, maybe some common area, but like
you're responsible for your chametz, your area, and your chametz. Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have to specify when you sell chametz, but you're selling?
So you specify what's in this room, what's in my parents' house, and then you have a clause there that says, and any other chametz that's in my possession.
Well, if you have done in the beginning, you just have that.
So you're right, I don't think I have. It says in the contract, any chametz I may have. Yeah.
There's no age limit to be yotzei under your parents' candles, right?
Well, if you're there, you could be yotzei. If you're not there, you're not yotzei.
I don't know why.
If you're there, so that's fine. There, yeah, you're yotzei with their candles. Okay, so now we have to start our preparations. So you guys have to get cups, and we need volunteers to start preparing them. We need how do we make charoses? So charoses is this dip we started explaining, and the dip is composed of ground dates, that's this, dates, bread, they did the work for us, ground dates, and ground almonds. You know, previous years I'd buy almonds and we'd bash them up together here. But this year Yehuda got us ground walnuts. That's fine. I meant ground walnuts. That's what I meant to say. Thank you. Ground walnuts. Thank you. And we mix into the charoses. So the charoses, we said, has a practical purpose, as a dip for the maror. But the charoses is also to commemorate the mortar that we made in Mitzrayim. So dates, ground dates mixed with ground walnuts. And then we put pieces of cinnamon stick on top, which is supposed to be like the straw that they would put into the straw that they would put in to make the mortar. Yeah? So all this together, plus wine, plus ground apples, which also looks like little pieces of straw. We'll grate the apples. I brought a grate. So that is how you make charoses. Date spread, ground almonds, and apples, and wine. Now the wine is to commemorate the blood of the children that was swirling around. As they would be mixing the mortar, they were throwing Jewish babies into that mortar. And that's why we at some point in the Haggadah, you will see, we pour in the wine. So we're still holding on the preparations of the Eve of Pesach. We haven't even started our model Seder yet. So let's get started. Okay, so you guys have to get cups. You'll go get a cup and you'll wash off all these leaves. Yeah? You'll bring them back washed. Adam, you'll wash off all these leaves. Brett, you'll wash off four apples. And David, you'll help him with the other apples. So you guys have to get cups and wash off the apples. It's a live. Could you wash off this? Thank you.
Can we use Christian baby blood instead of Jewish baby blood?